imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you will join us, and the world will live as one. There's no countries, it isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life. A dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you will join us, and the world will live as
beautiful, Peggy. And this Unity Band, again with Harry joining us today. Show them some love. Thank you so much. Yeah. They'll be back in a little bit. I love that song, Imagine. And to me, it fits today's theme perfectly. We've been talking this month about the blessing. We started the first Sunday with the blessing of spiritual community. And then we talked about the blessing of stepping up. We heard Kat and Pat's story. Last Sunday, Jessica shared beautifully about the blessing of stillness. And today I want to talk about the blessing of new realities. It was a very special week for me last week, and I got to experience a lot of new realities. My mother's 80th birthday was on Monday, and so I drove down early all the way to Wilmington so our family could gather, and because we didn't spend last Thanksgiving or Christmas together, so this was special to be with Mom for her 80th birthday. And I got to hold my brand new baby niece who's just a few weeks old, and we celebrated Thanksgiving. So just so many new thresholds, new realities. And as I held my little baby niece and I looked at her and my mind started thinking ahead, I started imagining. And I thought, well, this Christmas, she probably won't even know it's Christmas, but, you know, I can't wait until she's this old, because I had a tradition with my nieces and nephew every year until they were 18, whatever age they turned, they got that many gifts. And they were little, and just little things I'd pick up through the year, but they loved it. So the old grown kids now were telling little teeny Aurora, Aunt Darlene's going to get you gifts for the, you know. And I was thinking ahead and just thinking of all the things I get to experience through a child's eyes again. The beauty of new realities. Well, the scripture in Revelation says, behold, I am making all things new. That if God, the universe, the creative, could speak, if the essence of all that you are could speak, it is saying, behold, are you noticing? I am making. Not I can, I would, I could, I might, should, but I am making all things new. That every day, whether we realize it or not, every day, we step into a new reality. Really, every breath is a new reality. It's said that you can't step into the same river twice, because even though it may have the same name, it may be in the same location, it is never in the exact same state. That life is a continuum, that life itself is being, is evolving, is moving. Science now echoes that. Since the discovery of the Hubble telescope, we now know that life, this universe, is not static or still, but it's constantly, we call it expanding, is probably more accurately described as stretching, creating space. The universe is literally creating space for new forms of its potential to be manifest. And so it is with us, that as long as we're in this life, and I don't know what you believe about the afterlife, the before life, the reincarnation, we won't even talk about all of that. But what we know, that as long as we're in this life, that we're continually being made new. And a part of being made new is things break down, to break through, to break up. And so that's always happening in us. I remember Edwin Gaines, a beautiful Unity teacher, said one time, you reach a certain point in your life when you look in the mirror and you will say, honey, there's nothing on your body in its original starting place. Congratulations. You're evolving. Everything has left its original starting place. And so we know that as we develop and awaken to new realities, today what we want to talk about is that new potentiality, new possibilities, new states of being. This ties in beautifully with Advent and hope, because through the season we talk about hope and peace and love and joy, because those qualities are intrinsic qualities of consciousness, meaning that you don't have to try to have them. They're always there. They're a part of pure consciousness. It's about being available to it. And so new realities, new possibilities, new potentiality is always available. Perhaps one breath away, perhaps one thought away, perhaps one choice, one decision, one opportunity away. But new realities are always being made available as we are ready for them. And so today it's time for a reality check. Do you ever say to yourself, self, you need a reality check? I do sometimes. You need a reality check. So what new reality is calling to you? What greater range of possibility is wanting to be birthed in you and through you? And have you ever really thought about how do you define your range of what's possible for you? The Ugini Yoga teaching, there's a saying, it's a little verse that says this: it is the worst thing when people do not know how to escape from the old rut. It is dreadful when they approach new conditions with their old habits. Just as it is impossible to open a present-day lock with a medieval key, likewise, it is impossible for people with old habits to unlock the door to the future. To be ready and fresh and to have new eyes. It was interesting also this week, as I was with family and Thanksgiving and kind of working on my talk throughout the week, I kept seeing frogs. Frogs, real frogs, but mostly frogs kept showing up just in different places. And so whenever I start noticing a pattern of something, I go to the gospel of Google and say, what does that mean? And so I went to Google and I said, what is spiritual symbolism of frog? Listen, the frog reminds us of the transient nature of our lives. As a symbol of transition, metamorphosis, and transformation, the spirit animal supports us in times of change and leads us to new realities. You can't make that stuff up. That just reminding us, leading us to new realities. And I begin to think about the frog. You know, the frog, probably as a kid you may have done this, or in science class, where you see this teeny little tadpole that eventually grows into the frog. They have two very different realities, same being, but expressing differently, because the tadpole only knows its reality in water. But the frog knows the reality of water, but the frog also knows the reality of land. And the frog is therefore opened to new possibilities. And so it is with us, to open to new possibilities. In the Bible, this happened often, where people throughout the course of their life would have such a change in how they experienced reality and who they knew themselves to be and how they showed up that their name was literally changed. Abram was renamed Abraham. Saul was renamed Paul. Sarai became Sarah. Jacob became Israel. Simon became Peter. And why? Because in that culture, your name defined your nature, your character. And there were certain individuals who reached a point in their life, they had changed so much that they needed a new name to represent the new reality they were living. I know people who have renamed themselves because they've changed so much they needed a new name. And most of us throughout our lives, we may not have changed our name, but how many of you know that your name, as in your nature, has changed time and time and time again, that we awaken to new levels of understanding. Well, there are three primary catalysts that lead us to new realities, three primary catalysts for change. And I believe there's also three questions we can ask ourselves that help make us receptive, that help prepare us to be ready for what is ours to do. Because, you know, when we're talking about a new reality, it's not to compare, it's not to become something that you're not, it's not to force yourself to something you're not ready to do. But it is to be ready with eyes open and awake. So when those opportunities show up, you know how to take the opportunity. And you recognize that growth and transformation is a natural part of your life. So the three primary catalysts for change, for new realities, the first is developmental. Just like I talked about my baby niece, we in this lifetime, we grow, we develop. We go to school, we go to this grade, to this grade, to this grade, to help us recognize and see ourselves in the different stages of our development. It reminded me of a story that I had read about a grandpa who was holding his 4-year-old granddaughter, and he was reading her a bedtime story. And as grandpa was reading the little girl the bedtime story, she reached up and she rubbed grandpa's face, and then she touched her face. And then she looked at grandpa's hands, and then she looked at her hands. She turned to grandpa and said, "Grandpa, did God make you?" And he said, "Yes, honey, God made me." And then she looked at herself again. She said, "Well, grandpa, did God make me?" And he said, "Yes, honey, God made you too." She said, "Grandpa, God's getting better at this." And the story and children are so wise. But it just reminds us that we're always growing, that we age, we develop. That whether you want to change or not, whether you want to enter into a new reality or not, the very fact that nature, the nature of nature is to grow, to develop, to evolve. And so it's just, it's a natural thing. You are developing. So developmental is the first catalyst. The second catalyst is adaptive, to adapt. We start a new job. We end a new job, you have to adapt. You end a relationship, you gotta adapt. Health changes, family dynamic changes, anything changes, is added or taken away, it calls us to adapt. It calls us to show up differently. And that as you adapt, children, you may have children in school and the family moves. The children didn't choose that, but the children now have to adapt. New friends, loss of friends, new school, I'm not known here. You see, life will always put us in situations where we have to adapt. And when you have to adapt, that calls you to change, but it's also a threshold to enter into a new reality. I remember when I was in seminary in Unity Village, this is back in 2004, and in our class, there were 30-some people in our graduating class, and we had services that we created, and somebody needed to sing. Well, there was one person who could sing, but that was it. And so they kept saying, will anybody else sing? And I had been singing some, but I would always lay back and just sing harmony. And so I kind of made up my mind. I thought, you know what? Nobody here knows that I don't sing, really. And nobody here knows that I'm afraid to sing. So why don't I just adapt to this situation and show up and go ahead and sing? And so it created an opportunity because I had the opportunity to adapt, to show up differently. And so when life is calling you to adapt, it's a huge blessing if we'll begin to look at it and say, how am I being called into a new reality? What new potential is ready to come out? What new possibility is ready to open up here? And so we develop, we adapt. And the third is insight. And this is the one that we can use and work with all the time. Have you ever noticed that you have some annoying habits? Have you ever noticed that there's some things you do that you'd be better off if you didn't do? Have you noticed that someone you love has annoying habits? That's easier. Well, when we notice, oh my gosh, when I do this, it causes this. We have the opportunity to enter new ways of being through insight constantly. An insight that is born of awareness, insight that carries intention and will lead to action, literally takes us to new realities. There's a beautiful story by Robert Izzo. Robert had a little daughter as well. And one day he would just work, and he would struggle with trying to find time with his daughter. This particular day he was really busy, and he came in the door, and just as he came into the door at home, he was still on the phone. But there his little girl greeted him and, you know, just wrapped her arms around his leg, and he's like, "Hi, honey," but shh. And so he's walking around the house, he kicks his shoes off, he's still on the phone, and he notices little Maddie is just following him everywhere he goes. She's just eagerly waiting to have daddy's attention. But he's still walking, and he actually has to pull out the laptop, and he's trying to do something, and he notices this paper making noise. She's got some paper and wanting to show him something. He's like, shh, he's making noise. He's still working. There's more than a half an hour has passed now since he's been home, and he's not really even stopped. And so in a few minutes, he feels that tug on the pant leg, you know, the tug when the child really wants your attention. So now she's rattling her paper and tugging his pant leg, and he covers the phone a minute and says, "Honey, what do you need? What are you doing down there?" And she looks up and says, "Daddy, I live down here." He said in that moment, he said, "Excuse me, I need to go." Click. Insight. He talks about how that just really hit him. "Daddy, I live down here." And it caused him to begin to ask a question, which is our first question. So the three catalysts of change, the three catalysts of a new reality are natural evolution, development. It's when we need to adapt, when there's an opportunity to adapt. But I believe the most powerful is through our insight and awareness, when we really pay attention. And then that leads us to three questions that we can work with, all of us, to open to greater realities, to open to ways of being that we want to be. Robert Izzo said in that moment when his little girl said, "Daddy, I live down here," he said he literally felt a pang in his heart. He hung up the phone, and he asked himself the question, "Where am I now? Where am I now?" Have you ever driven somewhere and when you got there, you really could not remember the whole drive? If we all admit it, we probably have. I wound up in a ditch one time many years ago with that experience. I was just 17 years old, and it really rattled me to realize, wow, how unpresent we can be just going through the motions. And so the things that we can ask ourselves in any moment is to say, where am I, right? Just where am I? So just ask yourself, just close your eyes a minute, where are you right now? And just bring your awareness back into your body. And then notice where it comes into your body. Where are you right now? Give yourself the gift of being fully present. And so just open your eyes. The other thing that we can ask ourselves is, who am I being right now? Has anybody noticed that you like to be right? That you like to be expressed? You know, some of those, I'm a talker. I wouldn't be up here. And if you think out loud, I say that with my staff sometimes. I say, "No, I'm just thinking out loud," because I learned years ago if I don't say that, they'll all run off and do what I just thought out loud. But I wasn't through. I'm just thinking out loud. But who am I being now? Do I want to be right? Do I just want to express myself when it's really annoying to everybody else? Do I want to be, fill in the blank, who am I being right now? Are there times if you'd begin to use that discipline that you would have to honestly say, "I'm actually being a bit of a jerk. I'm actually being a bit contrary. I'm actually being," and so to ask, okay, where am I right now? And then when you find yourself in times of angst or depression, just to ask, who am I being right now? And then the third question is, what's possible now? And the power of that question is, where am I setting the limits of possibility? Where am I now? Who am I being now? And what's possible now? So let's look at three little true stories about that. The first one is Myrtle Fillmore. Myrtle Fillmore is known as the mother of unity. Myrtle and Charles Fillmore, a couple who were truth seekers and finders and loved the unity in many different world traditions and created the movement we call Unity today. Never meant it to be that this is what it is and only what it is, but it's a dynamic place of discovery that is anchored in the truth and recognition of who we all are as a sacred expression of all that is, and it all flows from that. But it started when Myrtle was a young mother in her 30s with three children. You know the story, back in the late 1800s, she was the end stages of her life with tuberculosis. She did not want to die, did not want to leave those children, leave her husband, but she was deathly sick. When, in the midst of that, she heard some new words, she heard a person say, "You're a child of God and you inherit the life of God. You're a child of God, you do not inherit sickness." Myrtle Fillmore in that moment was healed. Now you may debate and say, no, she wasn't healed until 18 months later. She wasn't healed until this happened. She wasn't healed. But I say that an insight reached her and moved out an old limiting thought and healed something in her right then and right there, because when she heard it, the hair on her arm stood up, chills ran down her spine, everything within her knew that is a greater truth. And so when we begin to notice our thinking, we begin to notice what is shaping my range of possibilities. Sometimes we find ourselves caught up in life's predicaments and we reduce ourselves to the conditions. What happened to Myrtle in that moment, insight reached her, and she held on to that insight and began to work with it until about 18 months later, her body was truly healed. And that was her path. That's the way that it worked for her. But where am I now? Who am I being now? And what's possible now? Myrtle had all of her life had believed that she was a sickly person and would probably die early. In that moment, when she heard what she heard, she realized, I can let that go and I can live a reality that more truly reflects the spiritual being that I am. So who am I now? Where am I now? Who am I being now? And what do I believe is possible? Some things we can do is notice our assumptions. Notice where we judge things. Notice where we just go to sleep and say, well, that's just the way it is. Notice where we close off and shut down. Another thing we can do is actively notice new things. In my first ministry in Lawrence, Kansas, I had a little boy that was the best at that. Every Sunday after church, he would take me by the finger and pull me somewhere and point out something like this. Reverend Darlene, why does the doorknob on this side look different from the doorknob on this side? No other person in the church, I don't think, had ever noticed. But I loved that little kid because he could notice anything and just had this little questioning mind, this fresh questioning mind that honestly led to some improvements because he had this little fresh eyes and a mind that was always questioning and noticing things. The second story, I read a book a number of years ago. Some of you may have read it. It's called Pour Your Heart Into It. It's by the former CEO, Howard Schultz, of Starbucks. And, you know, if you think back, I can remember being a kid and my parents coming home from church and having other couples over, and they had coffee. And there were, when you used to think about coffee, there were four things to consider: caffeinated, decaf, cream, and sugar, right? I mean, that was it. Now coffee has its own language. Believe me, I used to live in Seattle. It has its own language. Well, 1987, a man by the name of Howard Schultz took over Starbucks. It started out as one store on the waterfront in Seattle. It grew into like five or six stores, and they specialized in selling coffee beans when he took it over down at Pike's Place Market. And they begin to ask the questions, who are we? Who are we being? What's possible? And so as they were asking themselves that question, who are we? Somebody said, well, we're in the coffee business serving people. And they said, but is that really who we want to be? That's good. That's who we've been. That's what's got us here. But is that really who we want to be? What if we were in the people business serving coffee? What would that look like? And do you realize that turning that around and literally asking that question, instead of being in the coffee business serving people, we're now in the people business serving coffee. What if we created places that people wanted to go in and hang out? What if we created places that people liked if they were working at home, they'd rather bring their little laptop computer and sit in there and work together? What if we created a culture that could bring people together? Well, today, Starbucks is the largest coffee chain on the planet, over 33,000 stores, listen to this, in 83 countries. Each week, roughly 60 million people visit a Starbucks, and it's no more just caffeinated, decaf, cream, or sugar. There are over 87,000 drink combinations today. An entire culture, because they asked the question, who would we be if we focused on people? Now, you can look at that and say, yeah, but we're talking about spirituality and you're talking about Starbucks. And I ask you, is there any difference? The spirit is everywhere. And in my book, coffee's very sacred if it's done properly. But whether you like it or not, that's not the point. It's a matter of, do you believe that the man who has experienced that has had a chance to grow, to discover his potential, to be of service, to know himself in new realities, to create new realities for other people to grow, to know themselves, to serve? Whatever it is that we do in life, it's a holy service if we just remember that it is. Richard, would you give me that song? So our catalysts for change, again, are our natural evolution, the growing, the aging, the developing. Times when we need to be flexible, we can choose to be flexible, to adapt. It's those times and those places in our lives where we can use insight. I'm going to bring awareness to this so that I can let go of what has been. And I'll ask myself those questions, where am I now, just in this moment, where am I? Maybe you're standing in the grocery store line. Maybe you're in a situation with someone and you're feeling yourself get annoyed. Where am I now? And who am I being right now? And what's possible? What do I believe is possible? You may remember back when, just a few months after COVID, I think this was about April or May of 2020. I actually shared this in a talk then because a headline, the New York Times headline, caught my eye. And the headline said, unprecedented truce in notorious South African slums as gangs join forces to hand out coronavirus aid. Unprecedented truth caught my attention as I read that article. The essence of it was that very quickly in South Africa, in the midst of the coronavirus and the lockdown, people were starving because there was no one to distribute the little food and supplies available they needed to distribute it. And so a local pastor, Pastor Andy Steele Smith, went into prayer. And in the prayer, I think he was, you know, what's possible? He was asking, and a thought occurred to him. A thought occurred to him as like, well, who knows the communities around here better than anyone else? And he said, well, it's all of our gangs, but the gangs kill each other. They're rival gangs. Gangs in South Africa are terrible. But wait a minute, perhaps this is a new threshold, a new reality. We're all in a situation together. And so he called the head of many different gangs. And he had helped them with food in the past. And so they had some respect for this man. And these different gang leaders of warring gangs called a truce for 24 hours to come and meet with that pastor. He looked at each and every one of them in the eye and said, I'm asking you to do something unprecedented. I'm asking you to lay it all down, Forget your gangs, forget your alliances, forget your enemies, because today and in this time, we need to be on the same team. We need to be on the team that's going to gather these supplies. You know your communities. You know how to get out there. I'm going to give you the supplies, and can I trust all of you to not kill each other and get these supplies to people? And they went around, and every single one of them said, we'll do it, we'll do it, we'll do it, we'll do it. And so it made the headlines, because these gangs who normally would kill each other if they crossed into each other's territory, they divvied up the supplies, and day after day they went out and they knocked on people's door and they delivered those supplies. They interviewed one of the young men, a man named Sansin Hassan, and he said, I hope that this current ceasefire in gang violence will continue. I've never seen anything like this. I've never experienced anything like this. I wonder what it would be like this in everyday life. And so I have to ask myself the question, and I don't know. I'm curious if things went back the way they were. Or I'm curious how many people who got a taste of it, you know, the story of the children of Israel, when two of the scouts, Joshua and Caleb, the children of Israel, were wandering in the wilderness, and they hadn't been there 40 years. They'd only been there a pretty short period of time. When they discovered the promised land, they sent two of the scouts out to look at it. And the scouts came back and said, we can do this. We can take it. We're ready. But everybody else, nobody else was willing to change. And so it would then be 40 years before all of those had to die off, before they would be ready, a new generation would be ready to say, yes, we can enter into a new reality. As we wrap up this series and as we begin the one with hope, to me this is a perfect threshold, because it's asking all of us, it's saying, you're wearing a mask sitting in a building. That was foreign to you 2 years ago. I remember the first time I pulled up to a grocery store and I got out and saw a mask. It was a horrible feeling. I felt like I was in a war zone. Now it's normal. That there's so many things that have been happening to us that have asked us to adapt. And I think the real opportunity here is, what new realities will we create together? What questions can we ask ourselves? How can we discern who we are and who we want to be and what's possible, so that we can be willing, because it takes willingness, we can be willing to take the steps to create a new reality. Who am I being now? Where am I? And what do I believe is possible? And how am I setting the parameters for what I believe is possible? How many of you are willing to entertain some of that this week as we leap into the month of December, where we step into that season of bringing things, creating new things together? Well, let's take this into a time of meditative prayer with this song that says, Sweet Surrender. So I am opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light that I am. I am opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. I am close your eyes. The early followers of Jesus were known as followers of the way. The Tao Te Ching, the Tao is the way. The way is what you are. You see, you are the way that love is manifest in your life. You are the way that the activity of God, love, peace, joy, light, you are the way. You are the inlet and the outlet of the presence that we call God. You are the way. And at the essence of your being is pure consciousness, one life. It is the life that is continually evolving and stretching and making space to create anew, to bring forth new expressions. Just as the flower that has gone dormant, that will lose what looks like its life, that will lose and look barren this winter. And yet as the seasons turn and as the days go by, you will see that what appears to be dead is merely latent, has merely pulled its energy within itself to re-emerge as a now new expression. A new expression, a new reality of what it can be. You may not see yourself die in the physical, but my friends, you die daily. Just as the cells of your body recreate every so many months and so many years, you too are born to notice your beliefs, notice the boundaries of your being, notice where you set limits, notice where things could not be done a certain way in the past and now you don't even try anymore. You and I have been created to be mindfully awake. And just as the flower can re-emerge and what has appeared to be dead or latent can now come forth, that is surely what is happening in your life. And every time you go within, into the stillness, every time you willingly surrender and let go, every time you shake the dust off your hands and off your feet, every time you let go of all that you've collected and all that has attached itself to your identity, you are but making space for a new emergence, for a new discovery. For what you once thought was impossible becomes possible as you keep yourself clean and clear. You keep the wick cleaned. Keep the self prepared. And nature, God, will do what it does and bring forth new potential in and through and as you. You are ready. Allow the blooming, the becoming to take place in a gentle and a graceful way. Be willing to shake off the dust, to hold yourself accountable. Where am I now? Who am I being in this moment? Is my being, do I really know myself as pure spirit? And can I let go of the ego's hold? And what I call impossible, can I hold it lightly so that God can do what God does, and that is to continually evolve and bring forth new life? So we're opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the One. We are opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light that I am. We are opening, we are opening, we are the way, we are opening, we are God's opening. Sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the One. I'm opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous. sinless love light of the one I am. So to just open your eyes and to please stand. I'm going to sing it through one more time and just take this opportunity to acknowledge each other for the truth of who they are. So we are opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. Opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light. We are all.